I'd like to thank you for taking time to come and visit with us this afternoon. Our topic is dirt on sustainability. My name is Katie Hager. This is Dr. Elizabeth Coates and Josh Geigel. And the three of us are going to try and tackle this topic and see exactly what we can make sense of a topic that really is down and dirty. It was rather timely that President Duvall this morning talked about sustainability and that we have a market that is trying to define what that means to us and how we're supposed to respond to that. Sustainability really, definitely 100% is different from field to field and farm to farm. And so today we're going to talk about what is sustainability, how can we define it in general, and then how do we define it for ourselves and share that with others. The three of us will talk about what we do within our farms, ranches, and businesses that makes us sustainable, how we can reach out and lead the way with those that we come in contact on a daily basis, and then leave time for question and answers. So what is sustainability? As I said, it really is a dirty topic. It's a topic that is being defined for us, and it's something that we need to step up and decide what does that really mean. So in general, what the three of us came up with as an overarching umbrella definition of sustainability, it's really focusing on continuous improvement in order to maintain and improve the environment, our relationships, and our finances. All three pieces are really important, and the one piece that we often don't want to talk about is the financial component. We're humble, and we've been kind of slapped in the face saying we do what we do to make money. We do what we do because all we care about is that profit at the end. And you know what? We need to stand up and we need to say, you're right. But it's not because all we want is that extra nickel in our pocket. It's because ultimately we are a business, and our goal of any business is to make money. Otherwise, why would we be doing what we're doing? In order to be sustainable, to continue on, we need to have some kind of a profit at the end of our cycle, whether it's with cattle, whether it's an agribusiness, whether it's with crops. And so we need to say, yeah, we want to have a profit so that we can support our families, so we can support our employees, so that we can continue to invest in our communities and invest back into our own businesses to grow or to implement new technologies and practices. Currently, as I said, and as President Duvall said earlier this morning, the market, the food companies, they're defining what sustainability is for us. And so what I did was I went out and I pulled three examples of some different companies and how they're defining sustainability. This is a little bit hard to see, but it says, we care deeply about where our ingredients come from. While industrial farming practices have evolved to maximize profits and production, we take an extra effort to partner with farmers, ranchers, and other suppliers whose practices emphasize quality and responsibility. See how we're making choices with farmers, animals, and the environment in mind. This is Chipotle's sustainability statement. Our ambition is to foster healthier eating practices that are reflective of local cultures and agricultural systems, in balance with nature's ecosystem, and that can be maintained for generations to come. It sounds kind of good, a little bit fluffy, but then you start asking some of these questions. What's local culture? What's local agricultural systems? The company gets to make those choices. And the last one, environmental sustainability has become an essential ingredient to doing business responsibly and successfully. As the world's largest retailer, our actions have the potential to save our customers money and to help ensure a better world for generations to come. At the same time, it sets the stage for a more financially stable and responsible Walmart. Doesn't sound so bad. The question is, where are they going and how are they going to support this statement? They have a goal to be financially sustainable, financially strong, And they're going to go and look for what market share do they have? How can they one-up the other companies, regardless of what it is? How can they find the cheapest material or item that they want to sell in order to turn another penny? Really, what we're doing is not so much so different. We look at where can we get the best bang for our buck. If I'm buying corn seed, I'm not going to spend $20 more for a bag if I know I can get it for $20 less from somebody I respect and that's going to support my purchases. They're doing the same thing. The problem comes is that these companies are not coming and asking us about what we're doing when they're putting these statements out. They are making claims, and we are in need of responding to them. These companies look for market share, as I said. They want to sell a product. Sustainability is a hot buzzword, but 75% of our Fortune 500 companies publish a sustainability report. I ask you, should we not be doing the same thing? How do we share with what we're doing to let people know what practices we have? How are we saving our resources, people, land, soil, air, finances, in order for us to become sustainable, have a profit at the end, and invest it back into our families, employees, and business?
As Katie mentioned, the definition for sustainability can vary so much depending on who you're talking to and from farm to farm, from dairy to dairy, from business to business. But it's what is sustainable for you. However, when we start looking at sustainability, there really are kind of three pillars that pretty much everyone has agreed upon in agriculture. And those are the social, environment, and economical ways that we try to find that sweet spot in the middle to make us sustainable and viable in our own businesses. And when this all sounds great, but when you start breaking it down, especially when we look at environment, yes, in the dairy industry, we want to be able to produce the most milk we can with the fewest cows and at the same time do the least amount of damage to the environment that we can. But we also have to do it based on science. And I think that it's important for us to look at in any industry, in any part of agriculture that we're in, is to be sure that any implementations, any changes we do are based upon science. When you do a quick Google search, a lot of things will come up on sustainability, but the science isn't always behind those. In fact, one that I looked at was talking about, it was a consumer group that said to buy local, and when you start talking to the farmers, ranchers that you're dealing with, one of the first questions was to ask, and this was specifically dairy, was if they were grazed and if they were organic. Well, that's all fine and dandy for certain areas of the United States, but where I am in southern Idaho, grazing is not going to be logical or economical for the dairy all year long, and it's not going to be the best use of your resources either. It's not sustainable. So some of those definitions don't work, even though they might work for one person in an environment, they don't work another place, and they're not necessarily scientifically sound. Another, the social side. So we want to be able to, we are interacting with consumers, and we are consumers too. What consumers want to an extent, what we can provide them, and what is socially sustainable in the long term. And that kind of goes along with economic. When we start talking about economic, it's twofold. It's what's economical for you as a producer, and what's also economical as a consumer. Because we can do all sorts of changes and implement all sorts of things, but my cost of production for 100-weight milk may go up to $30 for conventional if I implement all those things instead of down at $17 or $15 per 100-weight. So is a consumer going to do that? Are they going to pay for that? And it may not really be economically viable. And then also for a producer, yes, there's all these wonderful things that I can purchase to help make me more productive, but can I be sustainable on my own operation if I do that, which may or may not be able to happen. And what, do you have the clicker? Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. What we'd like to do is share with you from each of us, from our different backgrounds, kind of how we look at sustainability and some of the principles we've talked about, this with Katie and I have introduced, how we're implementing them or helping others implement them, and then open it up to some questions for you.
So I'm Josh Geigel, and I'm from Western South Dakota. Fourth-generation farmer and rancher on a ranch that was homesteaded in 1907, where we still currently own the homestead. Some of the things we do today on our ranch to keep it sustainable and what works for us is no-till cropping. We receive 16 inches of moisture annually, so every drop of rain we get, we want to keep in the soil. About 15 to 20 years ago, Dad started experimenting with no-till cropping, and at first what we do is we switched over to a no-till drill, and we seeded half of our farm ground acres to wheat, and we chemical fallowed the other half. Well, as years went by, we realized from watching other neighbors and other studies that with no-till, we could plant a crop on every acre every year. So we developed a crop rotation of about four different crops. So now with 16 inches of moisture, we're raising corn, wheat, safflower, millet, and all of our hay that we feed to our cattle. And through these rotations, we've upgraded our equipment for making no-till better. One piece of harvest equipment we purchased was a shell-borne stripper header. So when we combine our wheat, all it does is take the head of the wheat off, and it leaves all of the straw standing. So right now we have wheat fields at home that are knee-deep in snow because that straw cut all the snow. That'll make a huge difference for this year's spring planting of our corn. And moving on to our beef cattle, we do rotational grazing with our beef cattle. We follow a conservation program that's called Take Half, Leave Half. So if you have if your grass is a foot tall, you basically let the cows graze 6 inches of it, and then you move them to a next pasture, and you let the pastures they've grazed rest till next year. This helps us catch snow in the wintertime, shade the ground from our sun, and allows it to retain as much moisture for regrowth next year. One other thing we've done with our cattle is we do controlled breeding. We've always had a 60-day breeding period for a lot of years, but we used to calve in February and March. And what we found by calving in February and March, we fed up a lot of hay. So we moved our calving back to start the 1st of April. So now our cows still calve for 60 days, but they don't start till the 1st of April. And by starting the 1st of April, that allows us to feed a lot less hay because the grass is already starting to grow in the spring. So the cows are getting some of their nutritional nutrients from the grass instead of us bringing the hay to them. And all the hay, like I said earlier, is raised on our farm and ranch. And then also with the corn we raise, we started backgrounding our calves when I came home to be part of the family ranch because we needed to somehow add value to our cattle to create more revenue to keep our family ranch sustainable since I came home. And by backgrounding our calves, we get a higher dollar for them, and we get to feed them the feed we raise on our ranch. So we aren't buying feed to feed calves. It's what we can raise right on our place. One other way that we help stay sustainable and to communicate to our community members is we're actively involved in our community. We're active on our county Farm Bureau Board. And we're also active in our children's sports. I helped coach my son's youth baseball league this summer. And we also are involved in the rodeo club. So we get to mingle with town people that don't get to be on a farm or ranch on a daily basis. And we get to help share our story of how we're being sustainable in our way. You know, and they'll say, well, is that really sustainable? And we have a chance to explain to them how it's sustainable for us, and it might not be for the next guy. So as Elizabeth said, all those circles of sustainability has to be all mingled together. That's how we do it on our farm, and I'll take questions later.
I'm Elizabeth Coates. My primary job is I'm a dairy veterinarian in southern Idaho. I also have a small row crop farm, but for this conversation, I'm mainly going to be talking about dairy cows. And I do traditional dairy work, but I also do a lot of consulting, and we primarily work with very large dairies, people that have 15,000 cows over several different facilities. And in that role, I do records analysis, worker trainings, and anything I can do to try to help the dairymen become more profitable with what they have. And in that role, I've been able to see several different things on different facilities that make some dairies either more productive, more financially stable, or maybe even more sustainable than some of the others. Some things that people in our area are doing from the energy standpoint is putting solar panels on our large freestall barns. In southern Idaho, we were traditionally a lot of dry lot dairies, but now we're having more freestall barns, and some of these freestall barns can be a half mile to a mile long. And so when you have that long of an area that's got tin roofs and we're high mountain desert, we have 8 inches of rainfall a year, so we have a lot of sun, and we can harness that solar power. And there have been some government grants that people have been able to get to help offset that cost to put in, but they're able to use the solar power to run their barns and those sorts of things and become more efficient in that way. It's something that I was at a conference recently that talked about solar energy that maybe worth looking into in your area because the cost of solar is coming down. That might be something that some of these solar businesses are starting to partner with and try to help give you 20, 30 years on those if it's something in your operation where you're using a large amount of energy. Another thing is water. Of course, dairies use a lot of water. The majority of that comes through the crop production side. It's about 60% of the water use on a dairy comes from the feed, but then the rest of that is on the dairies. And most dairies are being able to recycle water, whether they're using water through their tank for the heat exchange to cool their milk, and then they're feeding, and then that water is being used to wash out your barns, things like that. If their dairies aren't already doing some of those recycling water, we're trying to help them come up with a way to recycle and use less water on their facilities. Animal care is a big one, especially for me as a veterinarian. So, of course, we want to produce as much milk as we can with one cow, but at the same time, if we roll through a bunch of cows, that's not sustainable either. It takes a certain amount of inputs to get a cow to 2 years old to be able to milk her. So we're trying to look at longevity and overall health of these animals to try to pick the best cattle. I have one dairy that actually, when they're looking at like that you're EPDs, basically, to pick bulls that they're breeding their cows to, they're actually taking into consideration the health score of their dams and then also the longevity. And he's starting to rank those as high as milk production because he feels that those are more important to helping him become a more sustainable dairyman. And when you start talking about trying to make the cow more efficient, you can do it in feeding and a bunch of different ways. So, of course, the dairy industry is a big user of feed byproducts, depending on where you live. But cottonseed is one of the big ones that the dairy industry uses. We import cottonseed from Arizona, Texas, you know, all those places come up north so that we can feed the byproduct that you guys don't have, that you can't use, so that we're making the cows be able to use that since they're ruminant and can digest it and we can't. Greenhouse gas emissions is always a big one when you start talking about cattle that you'll hear people talk about. And in dairy, the entire dairy production when you take into consideration the processing part too, it only contributes to 2% of the United States greenhouse gas emissions. And then when you look at the dairy on the farm, 25% of that is coming from methane from the cows. So we do need to try to figure out how to feed our cows more efficiently to utilize our rumen microflora or the bugs in the rumen to be able to make a cow more efficient. The other thing is to be able to make a cow last longer so that we don't have as many young stock to have to replace those cows. One other thing that I feel is important is the innovation. And I think farmers and ranchers in general are extremely innovative. And we look at some of the dairies, what people are doing on some dairies can be extrapolated and done on other dairies to make them more sustainable. And then I always feel that outreach is important. Here I'm calling it outreach. Some people call it education or advocacy. But outreach to those people, even within agriculture that are in another field, may not understand what another commodity or area is doing to try to help become more sustainable. And I think that's extremely important.
And as I said earlier, my name is Katie Hager. Our family raises corn, soybeans, and wheat primarily. Also, we toss in some pinto beans and green field peas, kind of as rotations call for. I'm originally from Minneapolis. So when I met my husband and moved to the farm, I had no idea what I was getting into. Originally, when I started learning about what farming was all about and how I wouldn't probably see my husband for a long period of each day, I was kind of like, did we really get married? But I have come to love agriculture, farming, and looking for ways that we can improve upon what we're already doing. And a lot of that comes back to the purpose. Why are we farming? How did we get here? And where are we going? Josh touched a little bit on no-till. With us, we have a variety of tillage practices. It really depends on the type of soil, what we're looking at planting, and what's going to be following it the year after the current crop year. We do some strip tilling, especially when we're looking at planting our corn. And the main purpose for that is to mix up a little bit of the chaff that we have left from the year before, but also make a good seed bed for that corn that we're planting. In North Dakota, we have a very short growing season, a window of time, and we have like 78-day to 82-day corn, which a lot of people blink their eyes and like, is there really such a thing? But there really is. And so if we can warm up that seed bed, that dirt a little bit by doing some strip tills, it just gets that seed to germinate just that couple of days faster. And it makes a huge difference when we're looking at root production and the crop itself. We also do no-till, and we've really moved away from any kind of major tillage within our soil. And a lot of that comes back to utilizing the chaff, the residue that we leave from one year to another to increase organic matter. In North Dakota, we don't have a whole lot of topsoil in the western and central part of the state. And so whatever we can do to increase organic matter and nutrient value without having to fortify it through applications, we look at what can we do. Soil in general, we do a lot of soil testing. It does include some financial investment, but on the other end of it, it saves us from putting nitrogen down where we don't need it or other fertilizers. A crop can only take up so much and a soil can only hold so much or release so much, and so why put it down if we don't need it? And then we also utilize mapping for our application and for our harvest and production. So we know what parts of our fields and soils are going to be producing the most crop or has the most potential. Mother Nature always has a little bit of stake in that game. And so we use our data to actually make the decisions as to what we're going to do. How are we going to do this? What varieties of seeds that we're going to plant in which areas and go from there. Within energy, what we look at is how close can we get crops to where we need them to go. And so we're not necessarily using as much fuel. We are looking at what can we do so we don't have to make several passes back and forth. And then when we plant corn, we really look at what varieties can we do that have been shown to dry down well. We have a grain dryer on our farm, but it costs a lot of money between electricity and propane to do that. It also then increases time and trucking and all of that and employee burden and time commitment there. And so we look at energy and how can we save? Have we turned the lights off? Do we need to have the lights on? Those kinds of things. Planning is a really big part of our farm. We don't plan from year to year. We plan from like 2016 to 2020. We are long-term planners, we're long-term purchasers, and we're long-term marketers. So we look at where are we going to be, how can we position ourselves, one, to make as much as we can, but how can we also plan so that we're spending the least amount that we need to. We're trying to manage our risks as much as possible. Part of that also is knowing our inventory. What do we need to have on hand to be efficient? It costs a lot of money if you have a breakdown and have to overnight air freight something in. If we can save $25 here or $150 there just by having three O-rings on hand, it all adds up quickly. And those are some of the dollars that we can invest back into trainings and conferences and different things along that way. Labor is a topic that is pretty near and dear to my heart. Labor is really hard to come by. For the last 15 years, our farm has been using foreign labor. And a lot of people say North Dakota. Yeah, in North Dakota. And even before our oil boom. Finding people with skills that are willing to work variable hours that don't want that ergonomic chair that will be outside when it's rainy and windy and all of those kinds of things is very hard to come by. People want 2 weeks salary, they want to work, or 2 weeks vacation, want to work 9 to 5 full benefit package. And that's hard to do. We can't do that on a farm. We have to be flexible. We have been very lucky that we have had a lot of luck with foreign labor from South Africa. What is really hard is it's not an efficient process. We're not guaranteed to have the same person come from 1 year to the next, and they're only here for 9 months. We have been harvesting corn on December 16th before. We have been done harvesting corn on November 2nd before. So that's a long period of time. So you have to apply for dates of when you want this person to arrive and when they're going to be going back home. Well, if they're supposed to leave on November 15th, then you still have 800 acres of corn out there. They don't get to stay. And so playing some of the games within paperwork and trying to figure out where our needs going to be and what's Mother Nature going to throw at us is quite a task. It's quite an undertaking. The process takes about 4 months prior to when you actually need somebody to come in, and it's expensive. We use an agent, so that does add a little bit of extra, but it also hopefully guarantees that our paperwork is filed correctly. But along with labor comes training. It comes with appropriate salary for the task that you're asking them to do. And on our farm, we truly believe that if you have somebody that's skilled, dedicated, committed, and is willing to grow with you, to learn, and is able to cover for you when you cannot be there, they're invaluable. And so you need to match or find a salary that works for you as an employer and them as an employee. And it's not cheap. You know, our full-time people, we do give full family medical too. And everybody knows that that has grown exponentially. But there's a huge value that I can't put on a dollar amount on to know that when we have a crisis in our family and we have to be gone, that these people can pick up where we were and continue on with what we're doing. There's not, like I said, there's not a dollar value that I can put to that. And so a solid salary and benefit package is very important to us. It also helps keep them. We have 2 full-time employees right now, along with then my husband, and I work part-time with them as well as off on the farm. And it works well. But we have to know our budgets. We have to know where our expenses are, what we anticipate making with very conservative prices as we're trying to figure out where we're going to sit, and what can we afford? You know, can we afford salary, or do we need to go hourly? Can we afford full-time, or do we really need to pull back and say, it's going to have to be seasonal. We have to go 9 months. We can't do a year-round contract with people. The problem is if you go seasonal, they're gone. They're looking for something else. We farm in the middle of an energy sector. We have ethanol plant, we have open pit coal mines, and we have a power plant. If we can't provide good quality salary and benefits, they know where they can go to get it. And so we try to give them what we can in order for us to be sustainable by having quality labor and work and that they can give back. Perhaps the most important piece to this whole puzzle, this dirtiness, is relationships. Farming is all about relationships. It's about my husband and I knowing what's going on and where we sit, and can we go out to eat, or can I buy 3 pairs of tennis shoes for my son that seems to his feet grow every other week. It's about what's coming in the next years. Who might not be farming anymore? What land can we buy? But it's about communication with our employees, with our neighbors, with our landlords. Every year, something that we do, because a lot of our landlords live out of state or they're retired, and things have changed in the last several years or the last 20 years since they've been actively farming. So we try to tell on their parcel of land what was raised, how much of something that made. So how many cans of beer was raised if we raised barley, or how many loaves of bread if we had wheat on their field, or how many times you could drive X car around the world if we had corn that goes straight to that ethanol plant, to give them something tangible that they can then share with a grandchild or a neighbor or a brother or a sister. Another thing that we do is we give back to our community and to our County Farm Bureau with more time than I ever anticipated. And the value to that is exponential. They come to us to ask questions. When something is going on, they want to know. We're a trusted face. And in order to be sustainable, in order for us to continue doing what we love and want to pass on to our kids, we have to know that someone's not going to come and stab us in the back. By building that trust, by giving our time to 4-H, by donating our hogs to the community food pantry and sharing information about what they ate, where it came from, what the different cuts are, why we can't give them pork because our local meat our packing plant isn't certified to be able to donate to a food pantry for, sorry, not pork, bacon, for smoked meats. It has to be just the pure product. Other things in our community, any community event, freezer bags, carrying bags, whatever it is, whether it's cleaning up after the street fair or other things, giving back shows that you care about them and they will start caring about what you're doing. And so with that, I guess I'd just like to open it up to some questions for any of us, and we'd happily answer them. Any questions? Yeah.
How do you manage that box that the public wants sustainability you put in, right? We want to be a nice little package, packing go, know exactly what it means every time you go to buy some product or service. So how do you produce that?
I think it comes down to trying to relate to consumers that what is even sustainable in their own home, maybe what I can afford and what Josh can afford and Katie can afford, or our different values of what we want to be able to purchase are different in a home, just like they're different on a farm. And trying to explain to the person that the sustainability isn't wrapped in a pretty box. It can't be because of all the variables that are involved with it. And that would be my suggestion in any conversation with someone, is to try to get them to understand how many variables. It can't be a pretty box. It's a star or something. and all the rays are going to be different sizes depending on the farmer.
It kind of goes along with what Elizabeth was saying. Sometimes relating farming, sustainability, the things that we do on our farm and the practices that we have and how we go about making decisions to something that they're familiar with, such as buying a car. So all cars have the basic things. They have a steering wheel, they have wheels, and they have a body or a frame. But we all get to make the choices as to what color, how big of an engine. Do we need the pickup, the Suburban, or the sports car? And that's no different than what we're doing on our farm. What works with our needs and what the purpose and the value is to those kinds of things. You could use sports. You could use other things, too.
I would go along with what Elizabeth and Katie said already. I think the big thing is develop a relationship with that person if you can. And and explain to them, just like Katie and Elizabeth said, that one size doesn't fit all type deal, and explain to them why, and you know, and give them, like Katie said, good examples, or invite them out to your farm and show them why it works here but it won't work there type deal.
I appreciate you guys bringing up the point about how we hark on a lot of these businesses and their sustainability quotes and things that they come up with, and a lot of times we as farmers don't like that, but yet we aren't taking the proactive approach. And it reminds me of the point that I make a lot of times with my consumers. It's not the consumer that we're having the argument with. It's really the businesses out there that we are disconnected with, and they're coming up with their own message because it's in a pretty little box, and it doesn't work that way. You can't put a star in a small box. So I appreciate you bringing up that point to reiterate that.
It made me think of something that some of our food companies and packaging companies are doing, and that is having some of their employees connect with farmers. Actually go out. It might not be the CEO, but it's a group of people within that company making decisions, going out to farms. What does a soybean field look like? How does this happen? Why are you making these choices? Why does it grow here but not over here? And so they're trying to learn, but they're not necessarily going to reach out to us. We need to find a way to reach out to them and have them connect back to us. It might take one phone call. It might take an email. It might take 100. But we need to continue to try to open that conversation and engage with them on that food distribution and packaging and processing level, not necessarily always directly with that consumer.
And one thing that dairy is doing through the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy is they have guidelines, and they're voluntary for farmers to go through and look at. And there's right now there's 7 different areas that are applicable to the dairy farmer. And a dairyman can go through and answer their questions and kind of come up with an idea of whether or not they're following into the box of sustainability. But no one is expected to be able to have the exact same areas checked. It's just kind of guidelines of things that you can look at to try to be more sustainable in your own place. And I'm assuming there are those types of things with other production entities as well that you can look at to try to see if you are kind of fitting into what your industry is defining as sustainable.
My name is Adam. I'm from an equine veterinary practice in New Jersey, Virginia, and Florida. So my question is put first to Elizabeth, but the other panelists can join in. You mentioned worker training as one of the things that you engage in. And so ostensibly that means that you are foregoing short-term revenue for yourself in an effort to create long-term viability for your customer base. What success have you had in communicating that mindset to your direct competitors in the area? And this is something challenge that we face a lot is how do we get a group of competitors in a particular area to work with a long-term mindset with everyone understanding that if one person fails, they will gain short-term revenue moves?
Sure, and that's a very good question. I think partly, I have been fortunate that one large dairy that I work with sees the benefit of prevention in the worker training. So they are paying me in a similar manner that they would pay me to arm cattle or do other things. So I'm able to be able to have the short-term revenue. And then I've been doing this for 3 years on that herd, and they've been able to see the benefit to that. And so one thing that I've talked to other veterinarians about doing is that if you're providing a service that you're not charging for, maybe you are going to do some worker training, but you're not going to charge for it this month, still write it out on your bill as an item, but put no charge. But then as a producer, they understand that there was a service that was provided, but you chose not to charge for that at that time. But next month, maybe you can have the discussion. Did you feel like that was valuable to you? And if so, then I'm going to need to start charging for that service. And I think that's something that will work. In my area, we're one of the largest dairy areas in the United States in southern Idaho, and there aren't a lot of dairy vets that are doing more of what I'm doing. Most of them are still providing traditional services and doing consulting work from the back of the cow when you're arming cows and those types of things. And I do that still as well, but for me, I like to be able to... I grew up on a dairy. My family doesn't have the dairy anymore, and I like to be able to be involved with the management part, and that's part of my passion, and so that works for me.
How do you all feel about GMOs versus organic? And that seems like there's a big disconnect between you've got one group of people that everything has to be organic, and others that think it's got to be all GMO. I think it's going to be different.
That's a really great question. I can tell you that last May, I was able to have 24 women come out to my farm, and we did some cooking and discussion about different farming practices, what I do on our farm. And I had another lady that actually does some catering and food meal preparation and meal delivery, and she is organic. And so together we had that conversation about we are not in need of being in competition. We need to be supporting each other. We have different markets. We have different customer bases for the most part. And we need to make sure that agriculture as a whole has a positive message and that we're not shaming one to promote another. I've also served on specialty crop grant reviews, looking through the grants. And as a committee, we decided that if one industry shamed another, that grant was automatically thrown out. So I think we really just need to hold ourselves accountable to how we're communicating and help share that same message with other people, whether it's on the industry side or with a one-to-one conversation.
If it wouldn't be for GMOs, our farm wouldn't be able to have the crop rotation we have. In western South Dakota, without drought guard tolerant corns, we wouldn't be able to raise corn. I mean, we could raise it, but it wouldn't be financially feasible. We'd lose every year on it. So they're a huge part of what makes us sustainable. It gives us one more crop to put in our rotation to break up the weed cycle and to be able to spray the weeds at a different time where you can if you're a strictly wheat rotation. So to me, in my area or our farm, or organic wouldn't work just kind of for those reasons right there. If it wasn't for drought guard corn, we wouldn't be able to raise corn where I live.
And I'm with Katie. I think it is about food choices, that we need to be able to, if consumers want organic, be able to provide that for them, and we shouldn't bash another area. However, in agriculture, I've seen the figures that if we went 100% organic, we don't have enough land mass in the world to be able to provide the food for all the people if we're or all organic production. And so we do need to be able to adopt our technology, whether it be genetically engineered crops or different technologies. And then, like, the dairy industry is able to produce this a lot more milk now, I can't remember the exact figure, in the last 70 years, we can produce 3 times more milk than we used to with half the amount of cows. And part of the reason we've been able to do that is the efficiency of the crops that we're being able to feed the cows, and we're doing it with less land and everything else. So I do think that we at least need to look at adopting those technologies.
The other thing that I think I guess I should add is that when we have that organic versus GMO or conventional conversation, and you see things pop up and rent in all sorts of different places, it's, do people really know what they're talking about? Do they know what GMO means, or is it actually a traditional breeding model that's going on? Do they know what organic is, or is it just something that's been marketed to make them feel better about a purchase? Do they know what the practice is? You can still use pesticides. You can go to the website and look at that list. So I think it's part about connecting, sharing, and educating also, so that people can make solid choices, and then allowing them to make the choices that are right for them.
And then one thing that I would suggest to each of you on your own farms and ranches is to be able to think about what is sustainable for you. So when someone does ask you that question, that you can answer and you're not fumbling around trying to come up with a description when they're wondering why you're not organic, and to them that's more sustainable. Be able to come up with, like Josh said, why they need to be able to use the GE crops.
Yes.
Well, first of all, I'd like to commend you. You know, you three have all are sustainable, but what you really are is you have designed a business that will work with your geographic area where you're at, your customers, you know, and all of those things around it. Everything that compile makes sustainability, you know. And one thing, you know, you've touched on a little bit is, of course, profitability. You know, that's very important. Knowing your customer and knowing what you want. And that will vary from one end of the spectrum to the other, you know. And you need to know who your customer is and what they want. You know, if you give your customer, firmly, if you give the customer what they want, they'll pay you a fair price. If you try to cram something down their throat they really don't want, probably going to spit it back up at you. And that's part of being sustainable. And you guys have did that and did a good job of it.
Thank you. All right. So as we wrap up here today, a couple of things. We're going to leave you with a challenge, as Elizabeth has posed, to think about what is sustainable for you, whether you are in sales or whether you are a crop grower or livestock producer or poultry producer. What is it about your business that allows you to continue from year to year? Where are some places that you can look at making some changes? Or what things are that silver bullet that every time it has to be this way, it works, and this is why it's important? But I encourage you to keep looking for new outlets, new information, as you look at how can we be sustainable, and looking at those three pieces. So this is our contact information. Sometimes it's just easier if you want to shoot us some more questions, et cetera, take a screenshot of it or a picture with your phone. But we're definitely open to answering questions as they might pop up as you're running through some of your own planning. We encourage you to think about it. Thank you.